Muller House Meeting, Monday afternoon, 27th September 1976. Let us learn to accept thankfully, fully, without any resistance from within ourselves, all that the immediate moment gives us. Then we shall know the true joy of living, the real zest of creative action. We shall be able to see the beauty of earth and of heaven all around us. We shall hear the silent symphony of the great solitudes in which the stars dance forever and ever, as a music never heard before. It is life, life abundant, life eternal, with which we shall be in communion. But this acceptance, thankfully, without resistance, means that there is nothing of the self in us imposing its will upon that which is actually present in wholeness, in holiness. The moment something from within rises up and wants to assert itself, the beauty is spoiled. The music becomes a cacophony. If we can live thus, if we allow life to live through us in this manner, then we shall know the true joy of existence, the joy which never is born and never dies. And it is the joy not of a particular personal self, for that joy is mortal, but the joy of eternal being, manifesting itself in eternal beauty through all existence. And in that state, one is in true communion, living in communion with the whole universe, in communion within oneself too, and in communion with everyone else around us. It also means that in that state we are true individuals. Individual means that which cannot be divided up, separated up, broken up, which is always whole and complete, We are individuals within ourselves, and we are also at the same time individuals in the sense of being in complete union with all totality, with the one total reality. That is the full meaning of individuality. That is the individuality which is free of all egoism. There it is not a case of thou and I. There is only thou. Or if you like, only I. If by the word I you mean that creative sound of life itself throughout the universe, which manifests and affirms its own eternal existence. In that state, all that we know of our own being, as composed of both positive and negative energies in interaction, of the male and the female in our single persons in active play. All that we know in that sense will be a harmony, a whole. This is holiness, fullness, where none of our limited criteria in the dualistic, ambivalent sense of good and evil, of worthwhile and not worthwhile, have any place. You will see how in that state the individual himself is divinity embodied. That is why the Holy One can rightly say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, or I am the I which has given up the limited I, or he can simply answer the question when asked, are you indeed the Son of the Blessed? Then he can say, I am, simply. This is a state of harmony which transcends all our little concepts and ideas of harmony. Of harmony as being the opposite of disharmony, of discord. Then we know the true harmony, which in our dualistic manifested existence is a continuous succession of what we call concords and discords. The overriding whole is the harmony. That overriding whole is the one total reality in its fullness, in its all-containedness. And it is our divine destiny as men, as humans, to realize that in our own being. And in realizing that in our own being, selflessly, eternal God, if you like, comes to full self-realization as man. The man whom Elohim created in his own divine living image. And remember, he created man, male and female. Not meaning so many male creatures and so many female creatures, but each living creature is that harmony of the male and female. For this harmony of the male and female, of the positive and negative energies throughout the universe, is really the meaning of life as the product, the outwelling of creative activity throughout the universe. And for us individuals, it means the joy that has no end. Because this joy does not depend upon sensation. It has gone right beyond sensation. It has little, or in fact it has no relationship with the joy, sorrow, duality and conflict which the human psyche undergoes until it has come to full fruition of its true humanity. This is out forever. And when we begin to see this, there is an end to this foolish, meaningless, tragic pursuit of pleasure, mistaking it for happiness, for joy, in the true sense. If we do not try to pursue pleasure, this indescribable, perfect, everlasting joy of the one total reality suffuses, fills our being to overflowing through all time. We experience the reality of eternal joy. It is we, in our ignorance, who make the separation between this and that, where in fact there is no separation. The universe is a unity which displays that unity both openly and hiddenly throughout its countless, its multitudinous manifestations. We, mortal creatures as we are, with our spiritual eyes still unopened, think of all these as separate things, separate persons. We are not separate in reality. We are distinct and apparently separate from one point of view, the point of view of the self-enclosed, self-conscious individual. But when we understand that and realize that, the enclosure within the self falls down and we are open to the totality, and then we are awake to all the wonderful relationship, the interrelationship between everything and every person and ourselves. When we are open to that, we begin to know the reality of love. And reality is always transcendence itself. It is transcendence itself in such a manner, such an extraordinary manner, that it includes the apparently conflicting duals of birth and death, of this and that. But the relationship of these is so complete that birth is death and death is birth. Then you realize that death in its transcendent, profound significance is other life. It is not destruction, it is not annihilation. Nor, on the other hand, is it a continuity through time of separate entity, which can be identified as the same entity which existed in the past, and of which, out of our ignorance, we say, will continue in the future. Now, a statement like this obviously baffles the intellect. The intellect can't grasp it, for the very simple reason that intellect is bound within the sphere of logical presentation and logical relationships. It is necessary to have a minimum of logical presentation and relationships. Otherwise, that which we are trying to understand and communicate with each other will not be sufficiently coherent in itself to be understood by us. Because we ourselves, in our present state as we are, understand only through a process of time. A process of time which culminates in that sudden flash of perception, which is true vision, true realization. And then it sort of explodes into infinite light, and we understand, as we say. But when we have grown beyond that stage, that explosion, if you like, is a permanent light. And there is no explosion involved in it and no time process involved in it. It is then that intelligence in us which embodies and represents the omniscience of God, as it is called, functions freely and fully through us. And this is the meaning of man. Man, mind, creative thinker. The creative thinker who, by the process of the perpetual activity of this creative intelligence, holds the whole universe in being. The whole plenitude is contained within this unknown and unknowable void, which is full of creative power all the time. Begin to see these things not by trying to see them. To try to see means, first and foremost, that we are not actually seeing. That is why we try to see. If we actually did see, we don't need to try to see. We are seeing. And this is a point which we forget. Therefore, we struggle to see. Oh, I want to see God. I want to see the truth. Let me look for it. You won't find it that way. Why? This truth is not like the truth of technology or science or Latin or music or ordinary art or science that we know of. It is not like that. This truth is the truth which is the actual total reality existing here and now. It is within us. It is as if the miracle took place and your eyes can see themselves. The eyes can't see themselves in the ordinary way, the physical eyes. The great mystics, the great founders of the religions and so forth have talked of the divine eye, the third eye. This is the eye which sees itself at once, because it does not have to expend energy outwardly in the act of seeing. It sees by being the thing. To give an analogy which perhaps may be helpful. How do we see our bodies? We can, in the ordinary way, see our bodies because we can extend our limbs and look at them, but that's a part of the body. We can look in a mirror, or we can look in an arrangement of mirrors so that we will see the whole of the external shape of the body. That is what we mean ordinarily by seeing one's own body. But we don't bother to see the body except when we want to know whether we have tied our ties correctly or brushed our hair properly or something like that. We are the body, and in that being the body, we see the body. We can just as well say we hear the body, we touch the body. You are what you see. You are what you know. That is the full, deep, profound meaning of seeing, of knowing, in the sense of supreme vision, supreme understanding. Which means that now we have ceased to struggle to see, to know, to understand. When we have ceased to struggle, we are no longer in conflict with this world in which we live and which completely contains us. We are conscious of ourselves no more as separate beings, but we are conscious of the totality in which we are, with which we are totally interrelated, and in which we are completely and totally contained, not as a separate item, but as this indivisible, this individual, part and parcel of the whole. This is an extraordinary way of being conscious of what we call ourselves. But this is the supreme human way. You will find this kind of teaching in the great religions of the world. It is there. Now, one consequence of this state, of this vision, of this realization, is that the masculine and feminine elements in our own being are in complete harmony with each other. I'll use the same phrase which I used in relationship to transcendence. They are in timeless conjugation. Conjugation meaning creative activity. And this is the supreme harmony which we can realize here in this world in our most concrete state from moment to moment and from day to day. And this is the most concrete, material, if you like, expression of the marriage made in heaven. The marriage made in heaven is indissoluble. It is indissoluble not by the autocratic decree of a supreme being or power which imposes its will upon the universe or upon us. There is no decree imposed upon us. It is the natural state. It is so. That is how it is. And in that is supreme freedom and supreme happiness. That natural state. It is the freedom which never expresses itself in any form which we can call license or evil. There is no constriction. There is no limitation. There is no striving to win the freedom, no striving to maintain it, because such striving means conflict within the one total reality. So you see some of the deep meanings of our freedom, our spiritual freedom, our happiness, our well-being. How will such freedom manifest in our everyday life? As human beings who are in touch with and in relationship with other human beings around us. How will such freedom manifest? Principally, it will manifest through the absence of preferential choice. Throughout our lives, we exercise preferential choice. We prefer this to that. Preference has its place where you have to choose something for some technical purpose or some specific activity. If you need the right sort of tool to use for a particular purpose, well, of course, you have to choose the best possible tool for that purpose. In that sense, of course, there is the exercise of preferential choice. But where the acceptance of the whole of life as it flows into us and flows out of us is concerned, there is no such thing as preferential choice in the Holy One. For the simple reason that whatsoever life gives in its fullness is transcendent. It is beyond comparison. You can't compare any aspect of the divine with any other aspect. This is our human folly and our human weakness. So, in the ordinary things too, our preferential choice is reduced to the minimum. It technical minimum. That is all. But where our whole psychical, our intellectual and aesthetic and spiritual life is concerned, there is no preferential choice. Whatsoever the world gives unto us, we take, we receive, we utilize as trustees, we transform it into perfection within ourselves to the best of our ability, and let it flow out completely, holding nothing for ourselves. Then we are human, and then we are social. We are members of a society, the larger body of man, in which individual men and women and children are all contained in the relationship of love, of understanding, of cooperation, and of all the things that make human life truly noble and beautiful. So, preferential choice is out. And with that state, something else is also out. You know how the world, how our own lives are plagued with fear and sorrow. Where lies the root of that fear and sorrow? Most people will point to external conditions, external circumstances, to our organizations, to our policies, to the other person, to the other thing. Each of us is so ignorant, so conceited, so egoistic, that he will never point the finger of blame to himself. If he ever has a glimmer of sense and he says, "Oh, it was foolish of me to do that," then he will immediately find a dozen, 100 excuses and reasons which made him foolish for the time being. You see, this is what we are like. We must see the fact of what we are. Just see the fact as the fact. That is all. And not condemn ourselves or ineffectively castigate ourselves. That is masochistic. To castigate the other person for having done wrong is sadistic. We are all involved in the whole thing as one great body of mankind. So now, fear and sorrow have their origin within ourselves, our own ignorance, our own clinging to pleasure, our own pathetic way in which we separate things out and say, "This is what I would like and not that. And I take sides with this against that." So you see at once, I am the producer of conflict. I am the producer of sorrow and misery. Now do not think that therefore, if we understand all this and if we work through this and go beyond it, life will be free of anything painful. Not at all. If you or I emerge out of the mire of our darkness and ignorance and realize full humanity. There are others by the million around us who are, like we were before, producers and maintainers of evil, of sorrow, of fear, of mistrust, and so on. And we live in the world, and the psyche of the whole world is full of these currents. The psychical world is an actual reality, a whole system of energies at play, disharmonious play, very largely. Have you not noticed how, when we are in a large city, if we are at all sensitive, we feel this oppressive power of the psychical atmosphere in which we are? So we go out into nature, we come to a place like Elmau, quiet, a solitude, where there is ample room and loving nurturing by nature to put us into the condition of harmony again. Haven't you noticed that? So you see, this psychical atmosphere is a reality and it presses upon us. Now, if we have understood and the fountains of compassion have opened up within our own being, and the light of understanding radiates outwards and shines upon everything, then we will not refuse anything that life gives us. The perfected human, the Holy One, knows the fullness, the immensity of the suffering and sorrow of the world, and the fear from which the world suffers. He knows that, but with a difference. He himself is beyond fear and sorrow. Within himself, he is a center of infinite purity and an irresistible power, that energy goes out constantly, spreading healing, spreading calm, peace, beauty, order around him. He himself represents that order which is inherent in everything through the cosmos. Way back in the Rig Veda, which is the oldest religious text of the whole Indo-European race, there are hymns which extol this inherent order in everything which makes up the cosmos. The word is Ritta in Vedic, in Sanskrit. Ritta. It is from this word Ritta that our words like right, meaning correct, R-I-G-H-T, and the other word right, R-I-T-E, which means a ritual, are derived. And the whole cosmic process, it is one vast universal ritual. As long as that ritual goes on, this interplay of living energies, we do not break up into chaos in the sense of disorder, but we remain as a cosmos in perfect working order. This rita, this ritual, is a process of perpetual sacrifice. Now do understand the real meaning of sacrifice. Sacrum, sacred, and facio, facere, Latin, to make. I make sacred. The cosmic process in itself is the sacred process, the sacred activity of a divine creative energy. Man has the ability to interfere with that, to spoil it, to make it evil, to make it devilish, to unsanctify the holiness of the total whole, the reality. Man has that power. It is man's responsibility so to awaken and so to let his intelligence perceive that he completely ceases to unsanctify the divine holiness of the universe. And this process of putting himself in harmony with this universal ritual of creative activity, this is indeed the maintenance of the order by sacrifice, by making sacred. And man can cooperate with the divine process consciously. He knows it, he understands it, and from within himself he works in complete harmony with it. So you see, something of the meaning of living in communion. The communion established, made real within the individual being, within your own psychophysical being, the concrete expression of the unknown and unknowable divine energy from which we come. And it means, therefore, the marriage made in heaven at this level, and it also means the marriage made in heaven at the transcendental level, which we considered a few days ago. It means all that. Living in communion. And when we are like that, transformed and changed, and fear and sorrow have vanished out of our own individual being, then what is likely to be the state of man, of society, of the organizations that man inevitably must bring into being to continue his existence on the earth? Will there be disharmony? There'll be pain, of course, because pain and pleasure in terms of sensation are part of the material mechanism for the continued existence of the body itself. If we lost our pleasure-pain mechanism, we would perish. So we would feel physical pain, and as I said a little earlier, we would feel the psychical pain, the sorrow and misery of the world. But we must feel that. We must take it all into ourselves and transform that cup, that poisoned cup of the world's evil in our own being, and divinize it and lay it on the altar of the divine as our sacrificial gift. We have met here these 4 days. In love and friendship, the love which is not sentimental or just confined to an emotional outburst, but the love that is rooted deeply in the transcendent reality. It is that sort of love which, without our knowing it, brings us all together. And I'm sure I'm speaking for us present here, us who have come from England, us who are citizens of this country, when I say that we must remember with gratitude and love those through whom this place, this house, this sort of meeting has become possible. At no moment can man forget his gratitude to God. In the moment that he is blind to it and forgets it, the devil has his opportunity for creating discord. And the devil spreads no light, but a fire, a conflagration, which is full of death and destruction. But the human being is God embodied, silently, quietly, awaiting the recognition of that God within by us as we are. And if we can really wake up to it, then we know that every moment we have to be grateful to our fellow human beings and give them our gratitude and love for all that they do for us. Do not think that we have come to the end. Four days have passed by. 4 days of transformation, of a spiritual alchemy, which goes on and on throughout our lives without ourselves being conscious of it. So our meeting continues in all that, without the conscious mind knowing it or interfering with it. But let us not be so unperceiving that we do not keep it in our hearts silently. If we can do that, we do not come to Elmal and go away from Elmal. But the actual meeting in Elmal is like the peak point, the white hot activity of creation, which takes place in terms of time and space. And then there must be a change. And so, this rhythm, which in our ordinary life is a coming and a going, goes on. But underlying that rhythm is the everlasting unity of each and every one of us. And rooted in that unity, may we all know peace and fulfillment and fruition as true human beings. Thank you.